From Vox Markets, I'm Anita Riota. Welcome to Spotlight. Today, we look at the integration and development of artificial intelligence into medical technologies, or as the sector is commonly referred to, medtech. Countries today are racing to be the global leader in AI. Just earlier this month, President Trump signed the American AI Initiative, an executive order meant to stimulate the development and regulation of artificial intelligence. The order directs federal funding agencies to prioritize investments in AI, demonstrated by the Defense Department shifting $75 million of its annual budget to a new AI-focused office. The initiative comes amid U.S. fears that they are falling behind to China, with the country revealing plans to create a $150 billion industry by 2030.
Greg Clark, Secretary of State for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy, announced this week the UK government's plans to heavily invest in AI across various sectors. This investment campaign will include industry-funded master's courses and new PhD courses. These doctors of AI, Clark argues, will push the boundaries of existing knowledge in this area, finding new ways for this technology to be used in our lives, from supporting business productivity to helping us live healthier for longer.
Interestingly, on the same day Trump signed that executive order, Nature Medicine Journal published a paper revealing scientists had built a system that automatically diagnoses common childhood diseases, such as influenza and meningitis. The system processed over 100 million data points from around 1.3 million Chinese patients, from their symptoms and personal history to clinical lab data, and they had a diagnostic accuracy rate hovering around 90%.
While other sectors such as the auto industry or sports tech have fully leaned into AI as their future, there seems to be greater reservations about its integration into healthcare practices. So, we chose to dig deeper into the relationship between AI and medical technologies to better understand the potential benefits, the common concerns over its implementation, and how its arrival to market has impacted investment in the sector. To do all this, we turn to healthcare experts to guide us through AI's expanding role in medtech.
We spoke with Dr. Robert Pearl, former CEO of Kaiser Permanente, the U.S.'s largest medical group. Dr. Jenny Barnett, the chief scientific officer of Cambridge Cognition, that brings AI to the fight against neurological disorders. And Ariel Beery, CEO of Mobile ODT, using AI to create smart medical solutions to develop equitable and accessible healthcare practices. Before delving into how AI will mold the future of the healthcare industry, we had to properly understand the technology itself and what role it currently plays in healthcare practices.
So, how are physicians actually using AI today? Dr. Jenny Barnett explained how Cambridge Cognition uses AI to understand complex patient data.
So our primary goal is to combine technology and neuroscience to produce software that improves the treatment and prevention of brain disorders. And we do this in a couple of ways. Firstly, by making software for use in clinical trials and academic research that's both easier to use and more sensitive to changes in brain function than the kind of traditional means, such as pencil and paper neuropsych tests. So we're currently using AI mainly in terms of supervised learning. So using AI to build predictive models based on behavioural data that's been labelled by a human expert. So we work across a very wide range of brain conditions, things like multiple sclerosis and Alzheimer's disease, which are reasonably well characterised in terms of having biological markers and tests for the disease. And then psychiatric conditions like depression, schizophrenia, ADHD, where there's basically no way of objectively measuring symptoms or diagnosing the disorder other than through the patient's own description of their experience. So we know that these psychiatric disorders in particular, they're not well classified, they're not well characterized. There's not a one-to-one relationship between the diagnostic label that we use and the real biological underpinnings. So AI gives us a way of dealing with the kind of complex heterogeneous behavioral data sets that we generate from digital sources such as their mobile phone, and looking for real signals within that very messy classified data.
Ariel Beery told us how mobile ODT uses AI not only to make healthcare practices more efficient, but also more thoughtful.
One of the things that I have grown to appreciate about health and healthcare in general is that it deeply impacts the way that every person thinks about their own life, right? I mean, in the end, we are our health, and we can only achieve what we have the ability to achieve thanks to our health. And one of the things that that AI is based on, predicated on, is the access to information and the ability to utilize that information to help us make better decisions, whether we be healthcare providers and we're making better decisions for ourselves and for others, or whether we be patients and are seeking to better understand our own health and how we grow healthily and take care of those around us that we love. And so where mobile ODT comes is to say that what we want to do is we want to enhance the ability of people to observe data and to collect information at the point of care, specifically in women's health and specifically in that disease, which claims way too many lives, especially for women in rural areas and low resource settings, which is cervical cancer, and enable them to make better decisions based on that data by using the most advanced computational methods. And so what we are excited about and what we believe is exciting about the field is that now we have tools available that can help us make decisions based on less information that we needed previously with greater accuracy. And that's where we believe that the real opportunity lies with artificial intelligence, is to make better decisions more immediately to impact people's lives as early as that impact can come, so that people's health and well-being is significantly enhanced.
Dr. Robert Pearl, author of Washington Post's bestseller, Mistreated, and one of modern healthcare's 50 most influential physician leaders, laid out exactly what AI is and what common misconceptions of the technology are.
AI is an application that's able to analyze massive databases and reach conclusions based upon the information that's provided, without the human being telling it exactly how to look at that data. That's very different than what I like to think in medicine as algorithmic solutions or data analytics. So let me give you an example. The way a radiologist looks at a mammogram, the radiologist has been taught to look to see the density, the margins, or microcalcification, and across years of training comes to understand, well, how much density starts to worry you, or how do you define whether a margin is smooth or not? That's not at all how artificial intelligence works. This is what's most important for the listeners. Instead, you take 10,000 mammograms, 5,000 of which show cancer, 5,000 of which don't, and it applies through deep learning multiple levels of analysis and comes up with a conclusion that does not involve a physician teaching it exactly what to analyze. It does it by a comparison way, and that's its power, because the human brain could never remember 10,000 mammograms, couldn't even compare them, and the AI application can come up with better answers than the physician.
And that was our first task, to really grasp the fundamental nature of AI and what the nascent relationship between the technology and the healthcare sector is currently like. And what we realized is that it's all about data.
So to me, it seems like the underlying distinction, and this might be an oversimplification, but it's the what separates AI is this independent decision-making ability. Is that correct?
That's correct, but I want to add one piece to it, which is that it requires a tremendous amount of data input, and it's only going to be as good as the quality of that data input.
I think most of what's going on at the moment is that machine learning's consuming data generated by the healthcare system. I'm not really sure the extent to which it's actually being used in routine healthcare that we experience every day. Clearly, there are, you know, some use cases where it can work really nicely. It's often hard to know to what extent these are really in practice already versus being used in small flagships or demonstrators.
One of the things that Mobile ODT is doing, which is critical for access to healthcare, is we've built the Enhanced Visual Assessment System, which is a handheld video colposcope. It's a handheld visualization device that can capture the information that our algorithms need to make a decision at the point of care while that woman is in the room. And that's a huge leap, because even the best technology, if it's inaccessible, doesn't do any good. You need to enable the technology to meet the patient where she is so that her life can be saved when you have the chance to save it. And that's where Mobile ODT and the EVA system comes in. And that's where we believe the future of AI is. That is, we believe the future of artificial intelligence, augmented intelligence, is at the point of care through mobile computing, be it devices, be it smart decision making, be it the ability to capture patient information, and then through that information, make decisions that will help that information live a longer and healthier life. And that's what we're committed to as an actor in this space.
And reaching this maximum value, you know, is it all going to be down to reaching a certain threshold of data? You know, how do you get to this point where you're showing results?
Yeah, so the most important thing that we've learned in making AI accessible as a tool for healthcare delivery is to identify the very particular outcome you're trying to reach. In our case, it's identifying when a growth becomes dangerous, when the chances that growth will become cancer are highest. And then you optimize the data that you need to collect at the point of care with the data you can train the algorithm on, right? Because you don't need to have a highly complex, crazy statistical model that takes everything into account. If really the only thing you want to know is that thing that I see going to turn into cancer, or is it going to remain a normal or benign cellular growth, right? And so in this particular case for us, for Mobile ODT, we found that by narrowing the scope of the question we're trying to answer and getting really good at answering that question, we can create a fast, efficient point of care system that can run at that moment where a woman is on the table, on the examination table, and give her an answer before she leaves the room. And that's so far different from what's happening today, because today our entire ability to tell a woman as to whether she's at risk for cervical cancer or not depends on the collection of a specimen and sending that specimen to a lab far away.
In the shorter term, it's easier to use AI to transform the patient experience, so to make it easier and more accurate and more error-free to be able to generate that data. So, for example, that using automated voice assessments delivered at home. So I think at the moment we're using it because we don't necessarily know what we are. We're not using it in a pure discovery sense. We're largely using it to solve specific problems. So, you know, some of the problems that we're tackling in healthcare are really enormous, right? But they're made up of smaller, more defined issues. And we can use human labeled data, for example, to help get a handle on those littler issues. And to understand whether there's some face validity to the models that are coming out. And that's sort of a way of increasing our confidence and increasing the confidence of the people whose data we're using, that it's a useful use case, I suppose.
So I would say that AI right now in healthcare is minimally at most used and is sitting on the borderline of entering it. Having said that, these other applications, and I think it's important for the listeners to understand how powerful those are. Algorithmic generated solutions means you take an expert in the field, you analyze all the information that's been published, and make a set of recommendations. We were able to achieve outcomes that were 20, 30, 40% better than the rest of the nation, leveraging these kinds of algorithmic solutions.
I think there is great potential for AI to help the healthcare experience by automating processes and reducing human error within healthcare systems, and for enriching, not replacing, but enriching clinician judgment with data-driven approaches.
So if AI is this powerful, increasingly accurate predictive tool, we were curious as to what our guests believe the main benefits of more fully introducing AI into care practices would be.
So I think this issue of identifying real patterns in messy data is really important for us. So in terms of driving the science forward, being able to integrate voice data, wearable data, passive sensors with cognitive tasks and symptom reports that patients actively make, and being able to link that through, so linking everyday behaviours and clinically relevant outcomes wherever possible through patients' own devices. I think this is where our field will be able to make real progress on understanding the biology, the underlying biology of psychiatric conditions in general, and therefore start to make progress with more personalized medicine.
In healthcare, there are obviously these huge issues to tackle, like curing cancer or, you know, learning more about Alzheimer's. But there are obviously also smaller, more definable, maybe even managerial issues. Where do you think AI is best applied today?
Yeah, so I don't think the two things have to be mutually exclusive, as I say. I think you can go after the big problems by looking at the more defined issues. But biomedical data is inherently really complex. Healthcare data is inherently really complex and quite patchy and badly labeled. So I think it's easier to apply AI to each modality first in a controlled way, and also to help spot patterns across different modalities. So the problem with these data sets are potentially they're very large, they're very heterogeneous. AI is a way of tackling that.
So the big challenge that Mobile ODT sought out to solve was, how do we remove the need for expensive equipment and expensive experts to be able to move a woman from the death column to the life column? That is, how do we disaggregate the solution from the resource and infrastructure constraints that currently exist that damn the majority of the world's women to higher risk for cervical cancer? And our answer was the Enhanced Visual Assessment System, or the EVA system. And what we were able to take advantage of was the amazing computational capacity and imaging capacity of a mobile phone. That is, the reason that you need a really expensive piece of hardware today to be able to look at the cervix and scrape cells from the cervix and look at them under a microscope is that human beings are limited. You know, we need things to be of a certain size, and we need to be of certain colors for our eyes to be able to distinguish between them. But computers don't need that. Computer sensors don't need that. And algorithms can see completely different things than humans can see. And so by taking advantage of the power of mobile phones and enhancing their optics so they can see what they need to see of the woman's anatomy so that they can process that information and come to a decision, we're able to take a process that usually, even in the most advanced clinics, can take weeks and tens, if not hundreds of dollars, and reduce it to a 0.6-second analysis, which can cost a very reasonable amount for every woman on the planet.
So technology is kind of getting rid of the subjectivity that humans have from you know, visually looking at it. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. What technology has done in the past few years is advanced in leaps and bounds the superpowers of the ordinary primary care provider. That is, a primary care provider that has our EVA system becomes a superpowered women's health provider, because that which they needed previously to refer to an expert that studied for dozens of years with equipment that cost tens of thousands of pounds, now that primary care provider, that nurse who might have a high school education, can come to the same and better conclusion than what previously you required a whole health system to do. And that's the power of today's technology and the power of what AI can provide every healthcare provider on the planet.
The big advantage of artificial intelligence, I want to make the point that it is coming because of Moore's Law. Moore's Law states that every 1 to 2 years, computers are going to become twice as fast and twice as powerful. If you look over a decade, that's five doublings. That's 30 times more powerful. It's going to happen. And it's going to happen also because all this information on the analysis of images is so easily available and so clean, because it's come right off the machine, that this will occur. Now, why is it important? It's important because we can now get better diagnoses more quickly. Better diagnoses because artificial intelligence, looking at these very complex images, will be able to be 10 or 15 or 20% better than people. But even more importantly, it will do it faster. You go into an emergency room in the middle of the night, the radiograph that's taken is probably looked at by the emergency physician, but not by the radiologist until the next day. By the time they find it, we're 4, 6, 8 hours later, artificial intelligence will tell the physician in the ED exactly what it is before the patient can be wheeled back into the emergency area. That's going to allow better treatment more quickly without having to go back and redo things. Patients actually will be able, in many areas, to get their own information.
Ultimately, value comes from getting a better understanding of all of the patient's data, or at least more of it than we currently do. So moving this move towards real personalized medicine. Ultimately, for AI to make a difference in the sector, in healthcare, then doctors and patients need actionable information from it. They need to be able to interpret the outputs of an AI model at an individual level. So, you know, we all know what we should be doing to live a healthy life. We should be eating healthily and losing weight and taking exercise and managing stress and not smoking and not drinking and sleeping lots and all of these things. And of course, most of us don't have enough time or energy or willpower to do all of these things simultaneously. But if I knew that for me, the biggest long-term impact of my health would come from cutting down on saturated fat and eating five fruit and vegetables a day, then that's probably something that I would be more able and more motivated to do than just knowing generically there are all these things that are good for one's health.
Patients actually will be able, in many areas, to get their own information. As an example, if you had a rash, that's the kind of image that artificial intelligence could analyze extremely well and give you your own diagnosis quickly. The people who might not find it to be so great are those whose jobs could be compromised.
Right. I think that health systems have to be outcome oriented. And over the years, health systems have developed to have different policies, procedures, and guidelines that enable the practitioners in that community to provide the best possible care. And as the horizon of opportunity expands, as we know that more health providers can provide more tests to more women so that more women can access life-saving care and ensure that no woman dies of cervical cancer, the guidelines will change to ensure those tests to occur anywhere that a woman might be. So the more that we can do as a global community to encourage innovation, to reduce the barriers to care, and to increase the incentives for technologists to create new opportunities for providing care wherever the patient may be, the better off all of humanity will be. And yes, there will be a number of people who will be financially hurt by this. Some of the larger institutions that depend on inefficiencies will have challenges. But that's the opportunity here, is to save lives. And we can do that very quickly and efficiently, given the amazing transformation in communications and processing technologies.
And this is where our second central consideration emerged. What are the fundamental obstacles facing AI on the path to full adoption in healthcare?
The replacement of employees was certainly high among these, along with building patients' trust in AI and mitigating bias within the technology.
And that story of information technology, artificial intelligence, robotics, I mean, the people who use robots now to assemble cars have displaced the workers who did it before. If you're purchasing the car and you know it's going to be more consistently done well at a lower price, you benefit, not necessarily the person who had been on the assembly line.
I think patient trust is a huge issue for good reasons. And if you think of the people that are working in our field, you know, there seem to be varieties between that in terms of the entity that is collecting the data or controlling the data. So people trust university researchers, for example, at least in the UK, more than they trust industry researchers working for the pharmaceutical companies. Mm. They trust the NHS in the UK a great deal, even though there have been some instances where NHS data is perhaps not going where patients think it's going. And then they trust entities like Facebook and Google the least of those. So I think, you know, there are different kinds of data and different questions that all those different stakeholders can be involved in and can generate and be involved in analysing. But I think working together with the entities that patients and consumers do trust is probably something that industry can learn from.
As people, we trust other people more than we trust machines. Mm-hmm. What we don't realize is that medicine is probabilistic. Mistakes will get made, not because of a medical error, but because it's impossible to come up with 100% definitive right answer every single time. And when that's done by a machine, we become horrified, even if that machine is 10 or 15% better than humans doing it. And of course, what humans do is they hedge. They say that this image needs to have follow-up studies, or you should consider another possibility. And so we're much more tolerant in healthcare of people, which again is why I think it's a much more complex area. And of course, the consequences on human life, human suffering, are so great that one can understand that intolerance to error.
I also think there's potential for AI to sort of increase the power or rebalance the power that patients have. So, you know, at the moment, we're sort of at the level where doctors are getting people walking in with suggestions for their diagnosis based on what they've been able to Google. And that's not necessarily a great thing, but actually to be a channel by which patients can kind of get a second opinion. Mm. That seems like something that ultimately is empowering patients and educating patients and is potentially a good thing.
Do you think that could enhance consumer trust in AI as a product?
Yeah, I think that's right. I'm not sure exactly how it will work, but I think it has to be that people see the benefits and are able to access the answers themselves, as well as it being sort of a, you know, it can't just be a black box that some specialist has access to. That doesn't increase my confidence in that specialist's diagnosis. It needs to be something that is outputting things that make sense to the doctor and make sense to the patient. That kind of, again, that sort of individually actionable and individually understandable information.
How do we make sure that we have this economic value of AI in healthcare versus the costs of maybe arriving at this frontier. You know, how is this, how are we going to distinguish, especially, you know, policymakers who need to determine, you know, which ones we support, which ones, you know, we maybe step away from, you know, managing that risk?
Sure. I think it's critical for us as we delve into this brave new frontier and pioneer a whole new class of technologies for identifying and preventing disease, we need to stay outcome oriented. It's not about the procedure, it's about the outcome. If you can move a woman from the death column to the life column, that's what matters. And we need to be able to do that at the lowest possible cost in the most efficiently sustainable way possible. The more barriers we erect, the more challenged we will be. That said, we also need to ensure patient safety. So there are a lot of things that don't have the proof to back up their pudding. And we need to enable our technologists and our environment to rapidly validate new efforts and new approaches so that they can prove that the outcomes are better using more efficient ways. And so Mobile ODT is committed to that public and external validation. Our current algorithm that can identify cervical cancer using a single image with an accuracy that is close to 10% better than that of existing cytology in less than a second, where cytology will take you know, 2 to 3 weeks, was validated by the National Cancer Institute of the United States. And so, you know, we need to find those public institutions that have the public interest at heart and enable them to provide that public validation so that we can ensure that the technology that we make available in the field is the best possible approach to preventing a disease.
Some skeptics of AI have said that the technology actually reflects, you know, biases that humans, that we hold ourselves. And I don't know if you can touch on this, but how would you mitigate these sort of challenges? That AI is inherently as neutral as, you know, a human is.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. AI is as neutral as the, you know, it's as good as the data source that's being used is. Mm-hmm. So I think we go about doing that the same as we would any other statistical model, AI being a an extreme version of that. So making sure that the sample is representative of the population of interest, and then trying to replicate findings in independent samples. That's how good science works. And to do that, we probably need multidisciplinary teams and multidisciplinary workflows to really understand how good the data source is and how suitable it is for answering that particular question that's being asked of it with AI.
Let me clarify what I mean about not having the human biases by two examples. The first one is, I teach the Stanford Graduate School of Business, in addition to being a physician teaching at the medical school. If I take my students to the Stanford Graduate School of Business, I say to them, take out a bill from your wallet, look at the serial number, and write down the last two digits. The last two digits could go anywhere from 01 to 99. And now I ask them to do something that they otherwise have no way of knowing, like what percent of people are left-handed? The ones who wrote down 87, 97 large numbers will pick a higher percentage than those who had lower numbers. That's the bias of the human brain.
Wow.
And computers don't have that bias.
Okay.
It doesn't matter what the last calculation was. It does this calculation right. So that's why I say it doesn't have the human bias. Where it has bias is if the data it's analyzing is biased, then it will come to the wrong conclusion. I'll give you another example. If you simply feed it information about the women percentage in mathematics or physics, engineering, mm-hmm. computer science, you might conclude that women are not particularly good at these skills because there's not very many of them there.
Mm-hmm.
But what you don't, what the machine, what the computer algorithm or the AI can't figure out is that the reason is not because of the lack of skill, it's the lack of opportunity. It's the bias in society that has driven women into a different direction, let's say, than men in these particular scientific areas. And so there is a bias that's introduced, but it's not by the machine, it's not by the algorithm, it's by the bias intrinsic in the data set that we give the AI application to look at?
I think that personal privacy is an inherent right. I come from that school of thought, and I believe that technology companies need to bake into their architecture the personal security of each one of their patients. And that's what we've done at Mobile ODT, and I know that it's not a very difficult thing to do if you think ahead. And so in our case, we ensure that personal data is stripped from the cases that we use for training our algorithm and validating our algorithm. And we believe that every other company can do the same.
So would you say that this might be the human element still involved in AI, is being very cognizant of the type of data and where it's coming from that we're giving the AI machine? Because obviously we can be attuned to these more contextual details. You know, does that
Absolutely.
Make sense?
Yeah, that you know, people have thought that maybe physicians and AI would work in parallel and eliminate errors. So far, that hasn't shown to be the case. But what the human is capable of doing is understanding why the application, once you understand the application, is likely to come up with an error. The human mind can go outside that database and think of other things, whether it's in the area of discrimination, whether it's in the area of alternative reasons why what physicians write might not be 100% accurate, where there can simply be the fact that patients in times of pain and fear and anxiety may not be giving the right set of answers, not because they don't want to, but because they can't emotionally. Those kinds of things an AI application can't figure out, at least so far. But a person can figure that out very quickly and make sure that the application is not used inappropriately.
So we loop back to data and how effective use of AI hinges on the quality and neutrality of its data set. Now, we had to wonder, how are healthcare professionals going to ensure a high standard for data in AI?
That's where the power comes from, if the data is clean. How do we get it to be cleaner? I think we need far better electronic health records in medicine today. Electronic health records, and again, I'll speak a lot about the United States, but it's true for other countries as well, were designed not using the most up-to-date technology, not for the current devices that we had, and in many cases designed predominantly around billing and documentation. We need far better ways for that computer to take in information, that system to do that, so that the artificial intelligence can now, our application can now start to analyze that. That next generation of electronic health records, unfortunately, is not sitting on the near horizon.
I think that, but the human touch and the understandings of the limitation of a human's processing and sensory capacity are two different things. I think that companies who develop AI need to take the doctor's oath. That is, we need at first to do no harm when it comes to providing tools to healthcare providers so that they can make better decisions. At the same time, we need to work as quickly as possible to enhance the abilities of clinicians to make decisions and to conduct the right procedures. So in our case, we at Mobile ODT stand by the AMA's pledge to work towards augmenting intelligence, that is, to support the ability of clinicians to make the right decisions so that they can provide better care to their patients.
With the huge amount of buzz surrounding AI in healthcare, but not a lot of concrete consumer understanding, we asked our guests to tell us how they believe AI integration has and will continue to affect investor sentiment in the sector.
Well, I think that there's a lot of interest now in exploring the potential of artificial intelligence, but very little understanding of what the actual practical value will be. And I'm hoping that the public and private institutions that are market encouragers and those who can help grow the opportunities for new technologies will focus on the outcomes. We'll focus on moving women from the death column to the life column. The more we focus on those outcomes and we reward and compensate those technologies for having that particular impact, I think that that is pretty critical. And I think that, you know, the how the regulators are going to view this is going to be really important, because that's going to influence how investors will put their money behind AI, meaning investors and companies need to know that it's worth the risk. And specifically, they need to know what are the criteria by which companies will judge, will know whether their technology is good enough to launch. And so that's why that public-private partnership, I believe, is a huge requirement and opportunity for technologies in this space.
But specifically, what we're seeing on one side is an overhyping of AI in general and an overhyping of non-AI solutions. At the same time, I think that there is a lot of interest by investors about the potential that exists, particularly in this area of analysis of images. I know quite a bit of work is happening across Silicon Valley today at developing ways to get enough information into the AI application that it can come up with approaches that are able to make these diagnoses better than humans. But they say it's already 5 to 10% better than people. It's going to have to get better, but it will get better. And I don't know that anyone would have the resources to assemble that much information to create that computer system without having either the venture dollars or some kind of backing of a major global company. If the data set you're looking at is a good data set, make the investment, because AI will ultimately beat physicians every single time with that information. If it's based upon a laboratory finding, if it's based upon a visual image, if it's based upon data that's coming out specific to a patient where you can know the outcome, what happened across time, did they require hospitalization, did the cancer recur, did the was it a cancer, those kinds of questions, if it can be driven by a good, clean database, it's a good bet that sometime in the next 10 years, you'll have a viable product that you can sell.
Finally, with this background in place, we were ready to ask our guests what they believed would be the future of artificial intelligence in healthcare.
So I like the idea of, you know, my GP or primary care physician having AI working in the background alongside their clinical skill and experience to maybe suggest possible diagnoses or suggest additional questions or tests that they should consider. Or analyzing my medication history and saying, oh, these symptoms that the patient's reporting right now, that might be a possible drug interaction. So I think there's lots of things that AI can do that will augment the experience, the kind of human face-to-face experience that you have within healthcare.
Argue needs to happen, and unfortunately hasn't happened, is to embed artificial intelligence into devices carried by patients that would tell you whether you are okay or whether you're not specific to a particular condition. So as an example, if a machine has all of your blood glucose measurements for a patient with diabetes, it can tell you whether you're doing okay or whether you need to be able to change it. How could it do that? It can do that either through algorithms or artificial intelligence. You can program it with the same things we teach physicians, or actually the machine can analyze that data and be more predictive of what's going to happen based upon the change that's happened between your last reading and this reading. There's no question that artificial intelligence can perform better than doctors at doing that analysis. So why is that technology not available today? Because of the risks of making a mistake.
I think that human beings are always prone to hype.
Yes.
As someone who is seeing the application of AI to medicine from the inside, I actually believe that the potential is underappreciated. I think that that we're so used to putting things into mental categories of the past that it's very difficult for us to understand how new computational methods will transform our ability to provide care in the future. I'll use a completely different example. I use Tesla as an example, right? So Tesla, in theory, is a car company. And when you think of it as a car company, you compare it to other cars. But what Tesla is doing in many ways is transforming the energy economy. And in the same way, AI and connected devices are going to be transforming the healthcare system, because we're going to be able to find data that we thought previously was not connected, connect it in such a way that we can glean unbelievable insights that will help us to intervene in safe and secure ways to ensure people leave better, healthier lives.
I think most people that are working in this field are learning on the trot. You know, the field is moving on quite quickly. I think the more that there are specific successful use cases, which incidentally we should hopefully lead to successful business models, the more this stops being a kind of airy-fairy, hand-wavy thing and starts being just another way of how we do business and how we do science and how we do healthcare. So I think we'll start to see that coming through in the next few years.
In the long run, there is no question in my mind that technology will disrupt American and global healthcare. We know it now. And the winners of that will be patients who will be able to get higher quality, more conveniently, at a lower cost.
Well, I think so. I think that there is a lot of healthy skepticism by clinicians who are concerned that companies are trying to make decisions that they might not have the ability to make in the place of a clinician. And I believe that over time, that skepticism will be addressed through outcomes-based research that shows the effect of how AI can serve those clinicians in helping them care for their patients. And I think that in our case particularly, we take very seriously the need for interpretability so that a clinician can understand why our algorithms are telling them what their next step is. And we are engaged and committed to our partners to help them to care for their patients in the best possible way so they can save the most lives as quickly as possible.
It's clear then that while AI in medtech is only beginning to be rolled out, it must do so with the best data available and manageable goals. Yet, its power to enhance patients' healthcare experience is undeniable, meaning even more widespread adoption is on the horizon. We want to give a special thanks to our incredible guests, Dr. Robert Pearl, Dr. Jenny Barnett, and Ariel Beery.
This episode of Spotlight was co-produced by Francesca Morgan and myself. Join us next time when we look at what some are calling the fourth industrial revolution, the rollout of 5G technologies. As nations and companies alike race to become the first mover in 5G, we ask our expert guests what this means exactly for the international tech landscape.